If you remember, last week we saw a very positive encounter between Ruth and Boaz, which caused Naomi to rejoice in God as she started to realise that even after all she'd been through, God hadn't given up on them. And she recognised that Boaz was a close relative, a kinsman redeemer. And we thought last week about the role that that person would take on and the way he had a responsibility under the law to provide for and protect these two widowed ladies. She had hopes, she must have had hopes, that he would pursue that relationship with Ruth that had seemed to have started so well, to discharge his responsibility. But weeks passed. Nothing more happened. And so Naomi decides to take the matter into her own hands. She has a responsibility. In that context, in that time, as mother-in-law, she had a responsibility to try and get her settled, to try and find a home for her, a place where she could feel secure, a place where she could be provided for, a place where she could be at rest and know that she was welcomed. It was expected of Naomi. In a society that was where arranged marriages were the norm, Naomi had a responsibility to do something. And so she came up with a cunning plan. And Boaz was in her sights. She knows that tonight Boaz will be in a particular place. And she wants to send Ruth to meet him and to see what happens next. And so she calls Ruth and instructs her how to prepare herself. Wash, put on perfume, get dressed in your best clothes. Perfume, apparently, in those days was olive oil. I don't know how that stacks up on the perfumery shelves today, but that's what she would have been using. At a first reading, it suggests that Ruth is being told to dress to impress, to make herself as attractive as possible to Boaz. And I'm sure that's part of what was going on. But if we look at a little deeper, we see a couple of things. One is, the word best that we find in this passage, wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes, has been added. It's not actually there in the original text. It's been there to try and explain what's going on, and it might actually say more than was really intended. It's referring to the outer garment that Ruth would normally have worn. It covered the entire body apart from the head. She was going out in the dark. There weren't any streetlights, so dressing up wouldn't have actually made much difference. It was a garment that poor people often use as a blanket at night. It was their only source of warmth. And so Ruth would have needed it as she went out into the cold air. So whether it was best clothes or just what she normally wore is something we're not quite clear about. But I think maybe more significantly is this threefold sequence of washing, anointing, and getting dressed. Because we find that somewhere else in the Old Testament story. It's something that we find associated with David, one of the great kings of Israel, who, on one of his worst days, committed adultery with a lady called Bathsheba, and a child was born from that encounter. And God acted in judgment on David, and as a consequence, that boy died. And God had told David that this is what was going to happen. And David prays and prays and prays that it will not take place. But after 7 days, this boy dies. And when David hears this, he does three things. He washes, he anoints himself, and he gets dressed. He changes his clothes. He goes, and then he goes into the presence of God to worship. People say, why are you going to worship God now? Your son has just died. And David says, well, I can't do anything about it now. My time of mourning was what I was trying to persuade God for the son, my son to live. But God has done what God was going to do. And there is no point in me mourning anymore. And then he washed, he anointed himself, and he changed his clothes. And it is possible, and this is conjecture, I cannot prove this, that Ruth was still officially in mourning for her dead husband, the one who died when they were in Moab, and one of the reasons that had caused them to come back to Bethlehem. And that out of respect for her period of mourning, Boaz had not made any approach towards her. It would have been inappropriate to do so. And if that was what was going on, Naomi was telling her daughter-in-law that that time had to come to an end. It was time to move on. It was time to look to the future. We don't know. But whatever was going on, Naomi is preparing Ruth to go out into the night to meet up with Boaz after he lay down to have a sleep after a full day's work and a good meal. And then to do what he told her. And Ruth, not knowing what this would mean, in obedience to her mother-in-law, agrees to do this. And verse 5 tells us that she did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Actually, she does quite a bit more. Imagine the scene for a moment. They were at a threshing floor. This was a place where you got your harvest and you beat the stalks of grain to get the good kernel out that you could then use to make flour and so on. And they were normally at the top of a small hill so that it would be open to the wind to blow away the chaff, the stuff that came off the wheat that you didn't want. And so Ruth would have climbed up this hill in the dark, very careful to ensure that she wasn't seen. She had a reputation to protect. And often prostitutes would go out to spend the night with the men who were working there. Ruth wanted to not be mistaken for one of those. She went to find a vantage point where she could see what was going on and to take particular note of where Boaz was and where he lay down to sleep after the party was over. When everyone was asleep, there would be no lights. It would be pitch dark. And she had to ensure that she knew exactly where Boaz was. And then, when everything was quiet, she would have crept over to where he was sleeping on the threshing floor. And as she gets there, she uncovers his feet and lies down. Huge discussion about what this actually means. Is Ruth engaging in some seductive behaviour? What is she actually uncovering? How is Boaz, recognised in chapter 2 as a man of standing, going to respond? But if all we've seen of Naomi and Ruth is right, there's nothing to suggest that they don't have the high moral standard as expected of Israelite women, nor that Ruth would behave in any improper way. And the response of Boaz, when he does wake up, suggests that nothing inappropriate is going on here. All that Ruth is doing, really, is lifting up some of the covering of Boaz's cloak just over his feet, the lower part of his legs, so that he's going to get cold. And he'll wake up. When it gets colder and colder as the night goes on, he'll get a bit chilly and wake. And this is what happens. And maybe as he reaches down to pull his cloak around his legs again to protect himself from the cold, he realises that there's a woman lying next to him who wasn't there when he went to sleep. And he thinks, I ought to do something about this. So he turns to her and says, who are you? And Ruth responds. But she goes a lot further in answering his question than Naomi had told her to. Remember what Naomi said? Uncover his feet, lie down. He will tell you what to do. And Ruth says, I am your servant. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family. It all starts out as you would expect. I am your servant, Ruth. And what she's doing here is recognizing his social superiority. He was a long way up the ladder compared to her. She was poor. He's a wealthy landowner. She is on his property without invitation. She was a woman and he was a man. She was a foreigner. He was a native inhabitant. All of these, each of them would have been enough for her to recognise the difference in social status and for her to refer to herself as a servant. But then, instead of waiting to be told what to do as Naomi had instructed, she goes on and says, spread the corner of your garment over me. In the custom of the day, this was not just a, I'm feeling a bit chilly, can I have a bit of your cloak request. This was a direct request for marriage. It was a proposal from Ruth to Boaz, which you didn't really do, but Ruth did. In the previous chapter, in verse 12, Boaz had asked that God would bless her and provide for her, and now Ruth is asking Boaz to be the channel of that blessing. And the basis for that request is that Boaz is a kinsman redeemer, as we thought about last week. And then Ruth falls quiet as she waits to hear how Boaz will respond. Will it be positive? Or will he be outraged that she, a lowly foreign widow, has dared to approach him and spoken to him in this way? What he says next will have a huge impact on Ruth. Will she be accepted or will she be shamed? And the first words that she hears coming out of Boaz's mouth are words of blessing. As Boaz asks God to bless her, and as he speaks to her kindly, and as he praises her for her faithfulness to Naomi and for seeking him out as opposed to chasing after other men. If Ruth had indeed been in mourning before, Boaz recognises that this has come to an end and that he has an opportunity for a relationship with this faithful, this noble woman. And he assures Ruth that he will do what she asks. But, he says, there is a problem. I want to do what you're asking me to do, but legally I can't, he's saying. Because, yes, I am a kinsman redeemer. I am in that relationship with you. I have a legal responsibility towards you. But there's somebody who's a bit closer. Somebody who is a closer relative. And it is his responsibility to marry you and to care for you. That was how the law worked. Whatever Boaz thought about it, whatever his feelings for Ruth, whatever he wanted to do, he had to adhere to, he had to conform to the standards, the customs of the day. And so instead of maybe just marrying her quietly and hoping nobody noticed, he was going to bring this right out into the open. Bring this to the attention of this person who was closer and say, look, Ruth is here. Somebody needs to provide for her. I am willing to do it. I am prepared to do it. But you have a closer responsibility. And so is this something you are going to do? That was where Boaz was going to go next. And with all that was possible to be done that night done, the two of them lie down again and try to sleep. I doubt if they slept much, as they were thinking about possibilities for the future. Boaz was probably planning in his mind what he was going to do, who he was going to speak to, how he was going to talk to this relative, how he was going to make sure that people, the right people, were there to be part of what was going on. And then to try and avoid gossip and speculation, they arranged for Ruth to leave while it was still dark. They both had reputations to protect. And she goes back to Naomi with a token of Boaz's goodwill towards them. Well, Boaz goes into town to resolve the question of who will marry Ruth. Verse 15 says, then he went back to town. And we'll see next week. Well, I won't see, you will see. Next week, what happened then? If you want to know, you can read on. Okay? So that's Boaz, and that's Ruth, and that's the night that they've had. But what about Naomi? She will have spent a sleepless night as well, I guess, wondering what is happening up on that hill. And she will be eager to hear what has happened. And after Ruth comes back and has explained and shown her the barley that she's brought, Naomi encourages her to rest. Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens. There is nothing more for her to do. There's much that Boaz will do to sort things out. But there is nothing that Ruth can do at the moment to influence what happens. So that's what's going on in this story. And there's lots of ways in which we can think about that and think, well, okay, but it's an interesting story. Man meets woman on top of a hill, and this is what happens. But what does it mean to us? And I want to suggest that one way of thinking about this chapter is that it is a search for rest. When Naomi says to Ruth in verse 1 that she must find a home, what she's actually saying is that she has a responsibility to find a place of rest for her. A place where she can feel accepted. A place where she can feel included. No longer just someone from Moab, but a part of the community. A place where she can be provided for. A place where she has a future. A place where she has a life worth living. And it's something that people want. It's something normal for people to want. It's something that people search after. And this chapter suggests that two things are important in this search for rest. The first is actually doing something about it. Naomi could have just sat there and thought, you know, it would be great if Ruth had a home of her own, a place where she could feel safe and secure, and a place where she could be at rest. But if she'd done nothing about that, nothing would have happened. And so it's important to see that there is an opportunity. Work out what you can do about it, which is what Naomi did, and then to act on it. And that's what Naomi does, that's what Ruth does. But the second thing we see is when they've done all that they're able to do, they recognise the outcome is in the hands of somebody else. It's time for them to stop planning, stop working, to wait and to trust that the person they've entrusted their future to will do what is necessary. And so Naomi turns to Ruth at the end of the chapter and encourages her to wait and see. And this, I think, demonstrates a deep truth that's important for us to grasp and to allow it to become real in our lives. Lives where we often look for that opportunity for rest from the troubles and the challenges that we face in life. God, from his earliest engagement with his people, has encouraged them to rest. In Exodus 20, as God gives the Ten Commandments to the people, we find this. In 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the Sabbath day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And a few chapters later it says, 6 days you shall labour, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Even during the ploughing season and the harvest, you must rest. Even when you might think you've got a legitimate reason to say, well, I can't rest this week, I've got this extra important work to do, God explicitly says, that doesn't matter. You still need to rest. It was something that God knew was important. Something he modeled by example. Something he built into the rhythm of life for his people. And just as Naomi was hoping that Ruth would find rest with Boaz, a potential redeemer, so God has provided a redeemer who can provide rest for us. And just as for Naomi and Ruth, the way we engage with this, the way we enter into it, is by seeking it and then trusting God will give it to us. Jesus spoke about asking and receiving, about seeking and finding. Ask, he says, and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. And later on, he spoke about how people can come to him and find rest. Come to me, he says, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. We don't need to go through the same process that Ruth and Naomi went through. We don't need to try and make ourselves presentable and then hiding until we have an opportunity to creep up on Jesus. As members of his family, we are invited, we are encouraged to ask, to come, to receive. So my question this evening, are we finding life hard at the moment? Do we need to experience something of God's rest? I was reading earlier in the book of Judges, and there's a story there of a time that the people of Israel were being oppressed, and they were being oppressed because they turned against God. And so God was using a foreign tribe to try and bring them back to himself. And it says that they had been oppressed for 20 years, and then they turned to God. And the question that came to my mind was, why on earth did they wait that long? And the second question that came to my mind was, well, why do we sometimes wait that long? Maybe not 20 years, maybe 20 years. But sometimes God is there and Jesus is saying, come to me and I will give you rest. And we wait and we try our own ideas and we try and come up with our own plans. Do we, tonight, need to experience something of God's rest, whatever we're going through? If so, are we prepared to do the sort of things that Ruth and Naomi did? To ask, and then to trust that God will draw us into that place of rest so that we can experience peace and security in him.